This radio program comes to you thanks to millions of men in uniform, Americans fighting overseas.
The Treasury salute. This is a program of the United States Treasury, your Treasury, reminding you for the fifth time in this war, you serve and save when you buy war bonds. And you salute with us, a hero of this war, Second Lieutenant John C. Morgan, holder of the Congressional Medal. Your narrator for this Treasury salute, Edwin Jerome, with David Brookman and the Treasury Orchestra. Mr. Jerome.
Thank you. I ask you to hold on to your seats now. We're going to take you up from an air base somewhere in England in the B-17 on an unbelievable flight out across the North Sea and into hell. Our principal companion will be a youngster whose courage, determination, and skill won him a Congressional Medal of Honor, the toughest trinket you can win in this war. Listen to the story of co-pilot John C. Morgan of New York City. From headquarters, 8th Army Air Force, an order goes out on a ticker. It rattles in the teletype receivers at a half dozen heavy bomber stations over the English countryside. Sets in motion activity for scores of men at each field. Briefing officers, flak officers, intelligence officers, commanding officers, young men all in their 30s, are gathered and talking by 2 in the morning. By 3 in the morning, enlisted men come in and wake up the combat crews. 3 in the morning. It is cold.
What is it today? Anybody know?
I got $10. Says it's at least 500 miles into Germany. They'd never get us up so early if we weren't supposed to be over Germany by 8 this morning.
It is now 3 o'clock. There is breakfast, then briefing, then an hour or so to sit around. Then up into the air, and these kids will be over Europe. 5 hours from now, they'll be over Germany. What does the day hold for them? Flight officer John Morgan, co-pilot of his Flying Fortress, is full of breakfast now. Full of breakfast and full of facts about the mission. He and the pilot stroll out of operations room and out to the flying field, still long with the very early morning shadows, still gray in the English morning mist.
Tough one, Johnny. West of it'll be FWs, that's one thing.
How do you figure?
The way they've routed us. Did you hear what the flak officer said?
Yes.
The way we're routing you, the flak will be only deterrent.
Only deterrent. That I like.
28th of July, 1943.
What's that mean?
Just seems funny to think what you're doing a year ago at an hour like this. I was looking at that date book of mine.
Yeah? I was with my wife. I don't need to look at any date book. I was with my wife.
The men have been up and awake for 4 hours when they're at last seated, crouched, each in his proper position in their flying fortress. Waist gunners chat with each other. Rear gunner makes a minor repair to some wiring back in his cramped post. Bombardier and navigator wrench tops off ammunition boxes up front for speedier action in the immediate future. Ball turret yawns sleepily. Radio lights a cigarette, then quickly stamps it out. And in the pilot's office forward, pilot, co-pilot, that's Johnny Morgan, and engineer, all compare their watches, looking carefully at the sweep second hand.
I'm 10 seconds behind you guys.
Want to go argue with City Hall over 10 seconds? Come on, Johnny, let's look at the board.
Good luck, all.
Luck, Johnny.
I'll set you up to beers tonight. They're on me.
Flying along in formation now, due to make up with the German coast at 8 o'clock precisely. It lacks 8 o'clock by about 12 minutes when they hear the first yell over the intercom phone.
A bunch of FWs closing in high from 11 o'clock, sir. Check on that.
Pilots and crew are going up.
All on oxygen.
Second bunch, coming in at 10 o'clock.
Roger, left west.
My God, look at them all. Must be 60 coming out of the sun. Stand by, all. Here they come.
Pilot and co-pilot tend to their knitting. They've got their job. Navigator looks worriedly at his diagrams. Bombardier listens over the intercom, wondering. The others are all intent over their sights. FWs and junkers are boring in.
Looks like they're going to make a head-on attack on us. If they do, you know what to do.
Right.
Pilot to ball turret. Can you do anything about those FWs coming at us from 12 o'clock?
Let's go upstairs, Skipper.
We'll lose them now. I think they must have hit one of our elevators.
Look out. Here they come.
Let go! Skipper! Let go! Let go! Let go!
Skipper! For the love of God, you're on the controls. Lay off!
Shoot him! Shoot him!
Engineer! Hey, Waste! Co-pilot to Waste or engineer, get me some help.
Skipper,
you gotta get off the controls. Get off, can you? Waste! Hey, Waste! Engineer, will you get down here and give me a hand? Hey, Skipper, listen to me. Get back in your seat!
Johnny Morgan doesn't know it yet, but he soon will. His eyes have been glued to the control board, to the Nazi planes ahead of him, to his own formation. He hasn't noticed that a Nazi cannon shell has torn his skipper's skull wide open, that his skipper is half crazed. Doggedly, with strength full exerted, Johnny Morgan tears the controls away from the skipper.
Hey, you guys. Co-pilot to crew. Hey! Skipper, lay off, will you?
And now the pilot struggles back against Johnny. Out of his head with pain, he fights his co-pilot. Johnny doggedly clenches the controls, fights his pilot off them, heaves his flying fortress back into formation, yells through the intercom for help. And then he notices something, something strange. There's an unusual silence in back of him, in the plane in back of him.
The intercom must be shot out. No wonder they couldn't hear me. What'll I do?
Johnny Morgan grips the controls, still holding off the semi-conscious pilot. Behind him, he hears a thump and a crash, and turns to see the top turret gunner tumbling down the hatch, his arm shot off at the shoulder, and a gaping wound in his side. Johnny Morgan listened for some sound of battle in back of him.
Skipper. Hey, Skipper, can you hear me, baby? Hey, listen. Grab some morphine for yourself. Can you hear me? Doom. Hey, engineer. No shooting back there. Where are those guys? They must have bailed out. What about me?
A boy in his 20s, far away from New York City, far away from a pleasant home. So far up in the sky, he's using oxygen to stay alive himself. And with one hand, he must guide a huge, complex engine of destruction, while with the other, he fights off his best friend. And he's all alone. He cannot hear any voice from his crew behind him. He cannot speak to them or call for help. And if he could, he's by no means sure that there is help to come to him.
Even if there is somebody still on this plane, he can't help me now. Has to stay at his guns or at his navigator's desk or wherever.
A time for decision. Beside him, a half-crazed pilot, his skull torn open. Behind him, a friend, a crewmate, his arm shot off at the shoulder. No friendly voices in his ears. At least 2 hours to go to the target. Johnny Morgan glanced at the other flying fortresses in this formation, looked around at as much sky as he could see for any sight of Nazi planes, wondered if he still had a navigator who was guiding him where he had to go. A time for decision. He can always turn back to his home base. Johnny Morgan thinks of that bellyful of bombs beneath and behind him. As he a bombardier, he can hear no voices. He can hear no shooting.
I'll take a chance.
Johnny Morgan's chance was to fly his crippled fortress onto the target and dump his deadly load and then bring his plane and whatever of its crew remained safely back to England. Johnny Morgan decided to fly on through. There is no point in trying to make this story dramatic. Let's just listen to the cold voice of the officer who drew up Johnny Morgan's citation.
In the face of this desperate situation, Flight Officer Morgan made his decision to continue the flight and protect any members of the crew who might still be in the ship. For 2 hours, he flew in formation with one hand at the controls and the other holding off the struggling pilot before the navigator entered the steering compartment and relieved the situation.
Wow. I'm glad to see you, Tommy.
What a wound.
Morphine there. Give it to him.
The oxygen lines were knocked out. Half the crew's unconscious back there.
I thought they'd bailed out.
Well, they're okay now. Sorry I couldn't get up here before.
That's okay. I'll be able to handle it okay now.
Here's the official citation again.
The miraculous and heroic performance of Flight Officer Morgan on this occasion resulted in the successful completion of a vital bombing mission and the safe return of his airplane and crew.
They made Johnny Morgan a second lieutenant and gave him the Congressional Medal of Honor for that job. He hasn't been around to enjoy his glory for long. Last March, he went out on a mission, and he never came back. He's officially listed as missing.
Just a guy from the big city. A carefree guy who'd been checking up on his date book a few months back. Yes, it's men like that who are out there winning this war for us. Now, today. And they're facing the bloodiest battles of all history. For the zero hour is here. The fate of the whole world hangs in the balance. And what your country needs from you is fighting dollars. Money and more money. To back up those men and get this thing over with. The goal of the fifth war loan drive is $16 billion, and $6 billion must come from individuals alone. That means you. If you have to make a sacrifice, be proud to do it for the sake of men like Johnny Morgan. Remember, they offer their lives. You lend your money. So put every dollar you can scrape together into victory. Back the attack. Buy double the war bonds you bought before. The United States Treasury thanks Edwin Jerome, Larry Haynes, Carl Swenson, and all the other artists who appeared on this specially transcribed program. The Treasury Salute was written by Peter Lyon and directed by Paul Stewart. The music was conducted by David Brookman. This is Barry Kroger speaking.